Welcome to the No App for Life podcast. This is where we focus on the impact that our digital world has had on our human experience. I'm Joni Ciani, and you know, for decades, each one of us has been shaped by our communication technologies, particularly social media. Big tech has continued to grow into this multi-billion dollar industry that we use every day, and yet we actually don't have oversight on the safety of the product. We've teamed up with Fair Play for Kids for this three-part series called Accountable. My first guest is a passionate defender of the rights of kids and addressing the profit over people business model that we see in big tech. Laura Marquez Garrett is an attorney with the Social Media Victims Law Center with the specific mission of holding social media companies accountable. So, who better to kick off this series? When we hear that there has been no federal laws passed since the introduction of social media to oversee the safety of an industry, most people can't believe that. So, am I correct? Since Section 230, more than 27 years ago, that basically protects any content that any of us put up there, it makes them immune from lawsuits. Am I right about that? There's been no federal legislation passed to protect the consumer?
100%. 100%. You talk about 30 years ago, it was a different, these were different products. It was a different industry. The technologies were different. I don't know, you know, the exact moment that changed. I would suspect it would be right around when Facebook hits the scene and starts making these changes. But it goes back to what we saw 30 years ago, right? Virtual bulletin boards where people could go and post their thoughts. That's what Section 230 was meant to protect, that ability to share information. And it, more importantly, it's in the text of 230 itself. It's the user control, right? It's users being able to control those experiences, get access to information. And it changed. And the industry had no oversight. And it remained that way till we get to where we are today, with companies making billions, in some cases hundreds of billions a year, with no accountability, no oversight. And really, that's part of why they're making all that money, because nobody is putting them in check.
Yeah. It seems to me, and I think the thing that bothers me more than anything, what I've been sort of smacked in the face with over the past couple of decades here, is I can't wrap my head around the fact that grown adults, people with children and grandchildren, don't seem to care. I think we have like an apathy problem, or apathy and greed, apathy and power. It's a people problem, right? Because we could have solved this historically over the years when industries came out. We went, okay, automobile, what do we need to do to protect kids? Oh, we have these safety things. Didn't seem like there was a ton of pushback, unless I'm forgetting, but we always were like, well, hold on. How do we protect the consumer? Until this industry.
Yeah, I think for the folks in the industry, 100%. So for the designers, the engineers that saw the potential for these harms, that saw it happening, and you see that in the Facebook documents that the whistleblower released in late 2021, you see countless examples where you've got a company that sees these harms in real time, and is looking at those, is talking about those. You've got people internally who are even making suggestions. Hey, we could make these product changes to make our products safer. We could help kids this way. And leadership, because there's no oversight, because there's no checks and balances, this sort of what every industry is subject to, they keep going. They say, no, nope, we're not going to do it if it hurts our bottom line. For the rest of the world, if we give every parent and every person that benefit of the doubt, same with the court systems, right? What you have is a set of technologies that were being designed and operated in a bubble, behind a curtain, so to speak. And so with that lack of oversight, you have an entire world that just has no idea what's happening and had no idea. Mm-hmm. That's my hope. I have to hold on to that hope, because we're trying to change that. We're trying to change these products. We're trying to force change. And my hope is that it's not just apathy. My hope is that it is a lack of understanding, a lack of appreciation. And, you know, one of the biggest issues that we see when it comes to adults and children is that these products do not work the same for adults as they do for children. So you will get millions of adults out there who are like, hey, I have a Facebook. I get to keep in touch with family. It's great. I love it. And what we have to keep in mind is those adults are having a very different experience. They are not, you know, in the case of kids, and because of how these products are designed and these engagement, the prioritization of engagement, the programming, when a kid opens these accounts, their experience is very different. You know, examples are on Snapchat. If I'm a girl under 18 and I open an account, I'm going to get targeted right out the gate with predatory users, not just those users, but the connections that the Snapchat programming is facilitating. Mm-hmm. If I'm on Instagram, my experience is much the same. I'm getting bombarded with whether I have a public account or private. Now, I think on Instagram, a little less if it's private, but private was never a default for kids until recently. So you get these kids that are bombarded with these predatory users that are being connected to them affirmatively. On TikTok, I mean, I've got access to some teenagers' accounts that would make you lose sleep at night.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
16-year-old boys, and you see their search histories, and they're searching for Batman and Spider-Man and sports. So why are they getting go kill yourself? Literally, why are they getting videos that advocate suicide, that are preying and exploiting these children? And then adults, we have parents when it does happen to their kids, parents who are like, I don't understand. I had a TikTok. And we had one parent who was like, I just opened my TikTok and my dead child's TikTok in the same location at the same place. And what those experiences are could not have been more different.
I'm glad you brought that up. And that is something that I really want to stress because, again, as part of the Screen Time Action Network and Fair Play for Kids, we created a support group. We created a group called the Online Harms Group. And our goal was, I don't want another parent entering this group saying, I just didn't know. But I can tell you from being in this space however many years ago, and just to explain, as I mentioned to you, you know, I was in the Facebook world seeing, you know, right in front of me as a social science teacher, my whole life is observing and calculating and figuring out human behavior. So I was watching my college students trying to navigate this world. And this was back before the algorithms, and they were still sobbing and crying.
And these are college students. And these are folks whose brains are, I mean, 20, you know, 20 years old, a little bit, right? They still got a little, I think it's like 24, 25 before your frontal lobe really stops developing. So these are folks who are at least a little more developed than these 12-year-olds and 13-year-olds. And, you know, and I'll add one more when we're talking about age. I think when this all started, a lot of parents would chalk it up to, well, it's puberty or it's being a teen or not seeing the source of the harms and just assuming this is what teens are like today. One other striking thing I'll tell you. So we have over Social Media Victims Law Center. We have had over 2,000 families reach out to us just since we've been open. Right. So you're talking what? Not even 2 years. And I've talked.
Tara, hold on.
Yeah. 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 Oh, no, the number's going up every day. The number's going up every day. And I've talked to hundreds of these families. And another pattern that has struck me is what we see on the timeline of these kids' lives, their mental health. You'll see a typical, you know, what appears to be a typical child, no signs or symptoms.
Right.
They are close with their family. They are doing, either they are challenged in school, but they're working on it. They're doing well, or they're just excelling. And then on that timeline, as we get into the nitty gritty and we ask, okay, when was the first social media account? What accounts, what were the experiences? We start piecing together that timeline and the pattern that you see, and this is the key point, whether the kid is 10, 12, 16, you see that typical doing well, enter social media right here. And then whether it's a matter of days, weeks, or months, usually it's not more than a few months, everything starts to go down. And what's so striking again is it's not just, hey, these are kids, right? Because this happens whether this child is 10, whether the child is 12 or 16. I mean, right. That for me was the real eye opener of like, wait a sec, I'm now dealing with a situation with a 16-year-old child whose timeline looks strikingly similar to the 12-year-old child, multiple, right? And that's another point that we've got to look at is this is not random. It's not a coincidence. It's not puberty. It's not, these are real harms happening to kids over and over and over.
So let's go back to something you said just a few seconds ago in regard to, yeah, I'd like to just make sure that it was, the information just hasn't gotten to parents, which I noticed that. I watched over the years, me knowing what was actually happening. And then I would watch typical news, morning shows, the morning magazine shows, and social media got portrayed as this benign, harmless, yeah. Hey, do you know the latest TikTok dance? And so there was this prevalence.
They're advertising.
Right? And then I found out, as I did a little my digging, how many of the networks have so much stock in the social media companies that I'm like, oh man, this is such the web of.
Look at the American companies that have invested in TikTok. I mean, big names.
Right. Yeah. And so I'm going, okay, so I can see when I go to talk to parents at schools and high schools, I'm not finger wagging at them at all. I'm like, you have every right to understand social media the way you understand it because of how the messaging is getting out there into the general public. Yep. However, the next point you brought up was the way a kid is experiencing social media and the way a parent is, that has created such a power dynamic between parent and kid because a parent is going, oh my God, I have a small business. You know, thank goodness for Facebook and Instagram. Yes. My hair salon is thriving, really thinking that their kid is having some similar experience. So can I go back to asking, when you're looking at that timeline and you say, how can somebody who's searching for superheroes get a message that says, go kill yourself? How is that happening to a child? And where is the outrage that we're experiencing?
Right. How it's happening, right? This is the product design. These are the design features. This is not content. Nobody is saying some third party somewhere can't post a video they've created advocating suicide. Look, no matter how much we may not want to see that video, we may not want our children to see it. That's the issue that big tech wants you to think is the issue, right? It's the, anyone can post whatever they want. That's the virtual bulletin board model that you see in 1995, 1996. And I remember because that's right when I left for college. And that's when I was like, what is this thing called the internet? And it was amazing. And I'm going to add here a little bit of a segue, but as somebody who was trying to figure out myself as a member of the LGBTQ community, which I didn't fully understand at that point, that internet was incredible because it was an open bulletin board format. I could go into chat rooms. I could look for stuff without being targeted and exploited. Now, that's that content piece. You can post whatever you want. You can, that's content. What we're talking about with these companies is design and it's programming. And for that very reason, because if I am a 16-year-old boy and I search for Spider-Man and I get suicide content, that doesn't make any sense. Now, where it makes sense from these company standpoints is the programming piece. They want engagement. They want engagement at any cost. And so they prioritize it. And I've heard folks in the industry refer to it as kind of a dial. And you can turn it up for engagement. You could turn it, you could turn it this way for safety. And it's this constant, where do we keep this dial? And these companies with no oversight and no checks and balances, right? They keep it for engagement. And the engagement model is, it doesn't work from user input. It's not me searching for gay pride, for example. It works from engagement first, the goal first. So I want engagement of this user. And here's the 3,000 data points I have from this user that I've collected from what they've given me, from their web browsing history, from what I've purchased from other companies. These companies very often will know what car you drive, what your education level is. It's so you take My goal is engagement. Here's my 3,000 data points, some of which I probably have no business having, but there it is. And that equals what you're going to get from my product, right? That's what you're going to be shown. In the case of a teen boy or a teen girl or a young boy or young girl, it's all about outrage. It's about getting these kids hooked. It's about getting them so they cannot look away. So you may be searching. I mean, literally, we have a case of some young men who died by suicide. Mason Edens is one that comes to mind. And he had gone through a breakup and he is searching for, and I don't have the exact words, but he ran searches for uplifting content. That is probably a verbatim search. And he gets suicide and self-harm. The technologies know that this kid has gone through a breakup. And they know it from other searches he'd run. They know it from postings he's making. They know it from data they collect. And in that scenario, what is going to hook him, what is going to make it so he cannot look away, is sad and depressing content. It's not uplifting. And I've seen that with my own eyes. I've seen the account data. I've spent hours and hours pouring through these videos, these search terms. And so I'm not guessing at this. I'm telling you that there are teens who will search for something like uplifting content, literally, and they may get one video, they may not. And then what they'll get for the rest of the day are hours and hours of sad and depressing content. I looked at another one yesterday. I don't know if you've heard of the Blackout Challenge. And that is pretty common on TikTok. It's where children use a rope or something and they try to cut off their air until they pass out.
We featured that in our harms video with several parents.
Right. So we've got 8, 10, 12-year-old kids who are dying as a result of this. But the real issue, again, is not that there's this piece of content that someone has posted. The real question we need to ask ourselves is, are these platforms targeting our children with these dangerous types of challenges to increase their own engagement? Well, I looked at a TikTok, it's the DIY data where you pull it yourself. I looked at 3 months of this kid's search history. He did not search for Blackout Challenge. He did not search for, you have a typical kid. And when you look at those search histories, and that's what I hope as these cases move forward, that we will start to show people, like, look at this child's search history. And then look at what TikTok or Snapchat or Instagram was sending them. So, and then tell me how that's okay. And tell me how that has anything to do with content or a First Amendment or any of these issues. It doesn't. It has to do with product design.
We're so lucky that we have you fighting out there for us, and you put together this law firm, because what we've been hearing from our members of the Online Harms Group at Screen Time Action Network, we've had parents who have sued and who have lost because of Section 230, covering that, giving it the out. And we do now have some legislation that I want to talk to you about that is being proposed. I'm going to focus on talking in terms of protecting kids. We want to get this out to parents, to teachers, being able to give you agency. Finally, after 27 years, you have some agency now to hold social media accountable. We have been a bit brainwashed as a society, kind of going, it's so big. Oh, our government is so polarized. This is a bipartisan bill, which is shocking. I keep saying it's getting a little chilly in hell. Apparently something's freezing over because we have congressional members actually coming together. And as you're saying, it's kind of hopeful, right? We're kind of going, okay, we've had a lot of pain, a lot of tragedy. Maybe this year we can see something turn around. Tell me a little bit about this bill, what you think of it, how it's evolved, and what it might do to protect kids.
Yeah. So, I want to go back just a step and talk about SMVLC and sort of why I'm even speaking up on this issue. So our firm is founded at the end of 2021 by a very incredible products liability attorney named Matthew Bergman, who sees the Facebook papers and looks at those and says, wait a sec, this isn't Section 230. This isn't speech. It's not content. This is design. And so he founds our firm, and I, at the time, am a partner at an incredible law firm that I love. I've got the corner office. I actually have 5 kids, 4 are very small. You know, it is this incredibly secure, wonderful job, and I'm planning to retire from this place in however many years. And then I meet Matthew.
Support your kids
and support my. I literally have these college accounts. These college accounts, money's going into them. It's all, you know, it's easy. And then I meet Matthew Bergman in like January of 2022. A mutual friend connects us because my specialty is electronic evidence. It's forensic investigation. And so this mutual friend is like, hey, this guy is about to hold social media companies accountable. Can you imagine the discovery battles, right? Like the, so I meet with Matt and I see his first complaint, which is about a young woman, Selena Rodriguez, who was 9 when the pandemic starts. She starts using these products. At 11, she dies by suicide and she posts that video on Snapchat. And so I read that complaint. And my brother had said it and Matt says it. They say, hey, go watch this Netflix documentary, Social Dilemma. And so I do. The combination of these factors, you know, at the end of Social Dilemma, these designers are asked, hey, do you let your kids use these products? And they all say no, not even just no, right? It's no way. As a predominantly defense side litigation attorney for over 20 years, as a parent, that is when every bell and whistle goes off for me. Because I've never worked with a designer, a manufacturer, a distributor, whose kids were not essentially decked out in their product, right? Normally you're proud. Normally you're proud of it. To me, that's the moment where I realize, oh, wait a sec, this is not third-party speech. This is products. Like these designers, they know what they're doing. So that's how I end up here. In 30 days, I've left the corner office. My firm is like, what is happening here? And I've joined up with this guy, Matt Bergman, and the two non-attorneys that were part of our firm at the time. And that's what, February 2022. So all of that said, that's where this starts. It's frankly all about, for me, that's where it starts. For Matt, it's about fixing these products on the front end, because he's been doing products liability for so long. For me, it's about, I will be damned if these companies get to come for my children next. Mm-hmm. This is where it starts in February 2022. Now, at some point there, I hear about this thing called COSA. And I also hear that the sort of narrative that big tech is putting out there is, well, look, our products are really important for LGBTQ plus kids. It's really important that they have access. And I know firsthand, look, as somebody who came out right when the internet came up, yes, the internet was fantastic. The internet was very important to that journey because it provided me with resources and community. What it didn't do was it didn't target me, right? It didn't exploit me. It didn't harm me. It was a very different online world. So I see COSA, God, it had to be sometime in 2022. And I'm actually asked at that point, hey, will you come out unequivocally and support COSA? As a parent, as a member of the LGBTQ community, and as someone who sees these harms every day, I had concerns. I absolutely was willing to come out and talk about how dangerous these products are. But I had concerns with the original drafting of COSA. Because it felt like it left too much open to interpretation.
Okay.
So that's the original COSA. So as far as, you know, what I'm told, what happens is the co-drafters of COSA meet with LGBTQ groups. They get input. It's, as you said, it's bipartisan. They get input from every side. And then this incredible thing happens that really also gives me hope. COSA is reborn, essentially. I mean, I don't even know how to explain it. They make real changes. And so about a month ago, maybe I read this new COSA and I have to say, like, I cried when I read it. And I cried because not only was this something that I could 100% stand behind as a parent, as a member of the LGBTQ plus community, not only 100%, but as I read COSA even now, every time I read it, I see how this bill will save kids. Right. I see the hundreds of families I've spoken to, and you can see in the bill the changes, the product level changes that this bill aims to make. And we can talk about that in more detail. But,
well, you know what?
It's going to save children.
Yeah. And again, I love that we're doing a show that actually has this hopeful theme to it, because in part two, we're going to talk to Kristen Bride and Joanne Bogard, who both had an opportunity to be influential in the language of a bill. Yeah. You've got parents who lost a child and are part of the conversation. They're at the table. And I think that is something that you can feel a little sense of, wait a minute, we do have agency over our lives when we move, when we take that step. I had no idea, Laura, that you were so new with all of this, and you went from 0 to 100 in a year.
Yes. I mean, I was really right. So I did complex business litigation, but often that was defense side.
Yeah.
Right. So so sometimes when we go in these cases, I'm like, oh, if I were on the defense side, I'd do this. Mm-hmm. I literally changed sides.
So can you tell me what is in this bill that made you cry, and how the language in it and the accountability that will come with this?
Yep. So let's start with the fact, that COSA is aimed at protecting kids under 17, right? So it doesn't address 17. I mean, frankly, there, I almost think like, hey, what about the 17-year-old? But we're talking under 17, and then there's some stepped up protections for kids under 13, right? So 12 and under, we already have that in a law called COPPA. We already have that concept of under 13 gets stepped up protection. Then you've got, and I'm looking as I'm talking, I'm looking because I've made some notes on COSA, and I'm trying to sort of put it in a more plain language. Then you've got things like, let's just start at the basics. What is a covered platform? It's these websites that have these certain characteristics. And one of the changes that I believe this was a more recent change, is that it carves out nonprofits. Right. So right off the bat, when we're talking about civil liberties, when we're talking about groups of people who may need access to resources, for me, this is a hugely significant piece of COSA that I don't hear talked about a lot. And the reason is if somewhere down the road, somebody tries to use COSA to say, oh, you can't host, which I don't, we'll get to that in a moment. I don't think you can use COSA that way based on its plain language. But, you don't get to host these types of videos any of these nonprofits that are in these areas of whether it's LGBTQ rights, women's rights, all they have to do is create a website and make those resources available. And now you're outside of COSA, right? So as an initial matter, it has taken what I think is the biggest fear for some folks of, how could COSA be misused? And it has neutralized that. It has said, okay, I'll tell you what, nonprofits are out.
So give me a real practical application of that. For example, you're a 16-year-old and you're looking for community, or you're looking for help in some way.
Yep. Well, and so that's the hard part of this is I don't fully understand the other side's concern with COSA when it comes to that. But I think the way they're sort of formulating it is, look, what if a conservative attorney general tries to use COSA in its current form and says, well, you can never, gender affirming care content is always going to be harmful. And so we're going to go after the platforms under COSA for any platform that's allowing that content. Now, again, you don't even get to the first five steps under COSA, which is I don't believe it empowers these AGs to go and do this. But let's say it does. In that scenario, the ACLU, any nonprofit could simply create a website and say, okay, well, hey, folks, here's a website that's dedicated to these issues. I'm going to build in a chat room. I'm creating a virtual bulletin board. This nonprofit can provide all those resources that a conservative AG may try to target through COSA, and they're exempt from COSA. I mean, it's literally carved out that COSA does not apply to not-for-profits.
Okay, so let's roll back just a little bit and bring it to the most practical. Yeah. I'm a teacher. I'm listening to this podcast.
If you're worried, so what I would say to a teacher is if you have any fear that COSA will be misused in any way that will make it so that kids cannot get access to resources they need, resources they're looking for, COSA has a really important carve out, which is that it doesn't apply to nonprofits. And so any not-for-profit, any organization, if that were to ever happen, any nonprofit that were to take it upon itself to create a website and provide those resources that, let's say, an Instagram can't show or a Snapchat, right? Then that nonprofit, that website is outside of COSA.
Okay. So tell me what is inside of COSA. Give me the five basic. This is what COSA will do to protect your child.
Absolutely. So inside COSA, right, are going to be these platforms like the social media platforms. And I'm not going to get into detail about the sort of details of that. Also covered in COSA, and I'm looking at sort of my summary of this now, it's this individual specific advertising to minors. So something these companies do is they will target kids individually. We talked about 4,000 data points, right? So COSA talks about, hey, you don't get to do this. You don't get to target a kid individually or on the basis of a group of similarly situated kids who based on race, gender, age. You don't get to target every single child on an individual basis. That's dangerous. You don't get to target them with advertising. That is something these social media products do that is I don't know that it's ever been done. It's this targeted advertising. It's taking these data points. It's targeting our kids. So that's a no-no under COSA.
So the surveillance capitalism that...
it's the using of that private data to target a 12-year-old child. Not just now, there is a provision sort of later on that says, look, if you want to send an ad to every 12-year-old child and it's age appropriate, fine, right? But you don't get a target each 12-year-old child individually based on their age, their race, gender. Right. So that's a no-no, as it should, frankly, as it should be. So then I'm going to skip to section 3 of COSA. Okay. This is the duty of care. This is sort of the summary of what COSA is aimed at. And what section 3 provides is these platforms, these covered platforms, shall take reasonable measures, right, in the design and operation of products, services, or features that they know are being used by kids, by minors. I won't go into too much detail on this, but COSA then provides, 6 categories of the types of harms that are being caused, right? So it's saying, hey, you got to take reasonable steps in your design and operation of your products when you know kids are using them to prevent and mitigate these types of harms. And those include things like sexual exploitation, bullying, mental health disorders like anxiety, depression, eating disorders. But each of these terms, and so I'm kind of glossing over them, and I always encourage, please read COSA. Yeah. If you're unsure, please pull the new COSA language, read it. If you have questions, email me, ask anyone.
And can I just take 1 second to direct you right now? You can go to the fairplayforkids.org website.
Yeah.
It's on the front page.
Yep.
All you have to do is... click on that. It is right there. It breaks it down in real easy language. But again, we made it this easy because we want to give you that feeling of control that you have agency to do something to protect your kids. And when I say your kids, sometimes we refer to that as a teacher in school. They are my kids, right? Your own kids, family, your grandchildren. This is the time to put the pressure on Congress to protect our kids.
Yes.
So I will let you.
And you cannot look. We are here because we trusted an entire industry with making decisions for our children. We cannot do that, right? People have got to read COSA. Please read it. Read it.
Okay. So this is a good place to take a quick break. As Laura said, these are your kids. Read COSA for yourself. We've made it very easy. If you want to be heard, go to fairplayforkids.org. We're going to be back. We're going to continue going through the bill to make any clarifications and clean up any confusion that you might have. And we're going to be back with part 2 of our conversation with Laura Marquez Garrett from the Social Media Victims Law Center. I'm Joni Ciani. You're listening to the No App for Life podcast. This is the Accountable Series.